Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook/The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter @The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Hi, this is Marcy Shymoff, and you're listening to David Wood on the fabulous Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, David here, and welcome to the show. It is a beautiful, crisp morning here in Kelowna, British Columbia. I can't believe it. I have a fountain outside my front door, and it's from Indonesia, and it's quite large, and it's kind of got a ball on the top of it that sort of spins around, and it's sort of carved, and it's gorgeous. I went out there yesterday, and Jen says, "Oh my gosh, the fountain's making a crazy noise," and I walked outside, and the whole fountain looks like an ice sculpture. The water's coming, sort of goes up through the center of the fountain, comes over the top. The ball spins, distributes the water in sort of smaller amounts. And now it's kind of like I've been out there and sculpted this big, big ice sculpture. It looks so funny. Anyway, it looks great. And the fish, we have a little pond right outside the front door as well, to the right side, opposite the fountain. I've never had goldfish. I had fish when I was younger, but I've never had goldfish. I bought them in the summer for my son, and I went out just goofing around, and we bought like 18 of these things, little tiny ones, and now they're massive. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, you know what? Will they survive the winter? So just listen to this. This is so crazy. Day before yesterday, I was talking to my housekeeper, Manuela. I said, hey, listen, can you grab a little heater for the pond or something? And so she went down to the fish store and she chatted with them, and she came back with this little disc that went in the pond. And the next morning we woke up, it's minus 10 and everything's frozen. I'm telling you, if we hadn't had that conversation at 2 in the afternoon, there is not a chance those fish, there would be like little fried fish. I mean, I could thaw them out in the spring and see if they'd come back to life. But anyway, so good news is the fish are still alive. If you have any fish understandings, because we've heard so many different things about goldfish, you know, whether you don't feed them in the winter, whether they stay in the house, or whether they stay in the pond. It's not a very deep pond, but now with a little heater on there, they look fine. But they're not meant to be fed. Do you feed them? Whatever. So if you're a fish expert and you want to Facebook me about what we need to do with these goldfish, the pond is only about 1.5 feet deep, and there's 17 of them, and they look very, very happy. But right now they look very still. So, okay, looking for some fish facts from you guys. That would be awesome. But that's not what the show's about. The show is altogether about something else. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we think and how that thinking leads to our happiness. And I got a little science. I got a little of my own experience and lots to talk about. But first I thought, you know what? I was thinking about music that really inspires me, and the old blues music and the old jazz music, and the old, really old stuff. Like Howlin' Wolf is someone that I really used to like when I first bought a DVD player or a CD player. This was, I don't know, wasn't that long ago, 1988, 89, no, 91, I think it was. I bought all of this like old blues stuff, and I just like, they're so raw, and you can see how all music has sort of emerged from this great era. So if you don't listen to old blues, have a listen to this. If you're interested, you can go to the website, thekickasslife.com and just put the number of the show, and the show notes will pop up magically, and you can get all the links if you love this stuff, right? But have a little listen to Howlin' Wolf.
Oh, don't you hear me cry? Woo!
This guy in his suit somewhere in Chicago and in a smoky filled bar, just rocking it up, you know. I remember when I met B.B. King, you know, he was a little bit like that, just this sort of, just this crazy soul for music. I think back when I met him, he was like 70 something. He's still playing. I mean, he sits down through the whole thing, but anyway, welcome to the show. I'm excited, as usual. I live in an excited world. I don't know what it is, but it's really interesting because it sort of sets up the topic a little bit. I was sort of talking about happiness a moment ago because Jen is a happiness practitioner, she calls herself, and has her Facebook page is Happitude, like attitude and happiness. And the idea of practicing happiness, you know, and we had a conversation yesterday which sparked this whole kind of thought process. Jen is a practitioner of happiness and believes that happiness is something you practice all the time. And I agree with that. And I think that it's possible to be happy just because of the way we think. And that quite often we think ourselves out of happiness. And I was watching a TED talk by a guy called Dan Gilbert, a scientist. And I want to sort of share a little bit of the first part of that with you, just so that you can listen into sort of some of the science that he really has to talk about, which I think is, you know, it's one of those things where a scientist, you know, I know they study, I mean, it's just black and white. It's just facts, right? And so when it's all about just, you know, black and white data or facts, you know, it's very, very hard to argue with. And when they sort of understand you know, exactly what's going on in the human mind and really, you know, they do sort of blind tests, which really substantiate, you can tell, I always know when I'm going, it's because I'm trying to set something up, right? That's what's really going on here, ladies and gentlemen. I have to confess, I just pushed the button and it didn't work. And so I had to reboot out of there. And I'm back in TED right now to play this. But don't forget, this link will be on there. If you want to listen to the whole part of this by Dan Gilbert, it's actually really, really good. I won't play it all for you, but I'm going to play a few minutes for you so you can sort of see what the scientists have to say about happiness. And let's have a chat about it afterwards.
When you have 21 minutes to speak, 2 million years seems like a really long time. But evolutionarily, 2 million years is nothing. And yet in 2 million years, the human brain has nearly tripled in mass, going from the 1.25-pound brain of our ancestor here, Habilis, to the almost 3-pound meatloaf that everybody here has between their ears. What is it about a big brain that nature was so eager for everyone else to have one? Well, it turns out when brains triple in size, they don't just get 3 times bigger, they gain new structures. And one of the main reasons that our brain got so big is because it got a new part called the frontal lobe, and particularly a part called the prefrontal cortex. Now, what does a prefrontal cortex do for you that should justify the entire architectural overhaul of the human skull in the blink of evolutionary time? Well, turns out the prefrontal cortex does lots of things, but one of the most important things it does is it is an experience simulator. You know, pilots practice in flight simulators so that they don't make real mistakes in planes. Human beings have this marvelous adaptation that they can actually have experiences in their heads before they try them out in real life. This is a trick that none of our ancestors could do, that no other animal can do quite like we can. It's a marvelous adaptation. It's up there with opposable thumbs and standing upright in language as one of the things that got our species out of the trees and into the shopping mall.
I love this guy. For a scientist, he's really fun to listen to. So I really, really urge you to go to TED and listen to this whole thing. What he's setting up here, which I again, you've heard me speak about how I feel, you know, about becoming a paraplegic or quadriplegic. I've said that, you know, I have this understanding of how I'm going to be. I don't doubt it. If I'm I have a friend who was burned. I've had people who have had massive accidents. Who life changes in a millisecond, and there's people I know who have become, you know, victims about it, and people who have gone on to do more than they could have ever done. In fact, we've had people on the show like this, you know, who've lost their legs and they look, you know, a few years later, they're saying, I'm so glad this happened. This was one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life. And I would never go back and have my legs back, right? You know, the woman that Marcy Shimoff spoke about, you know, in one of my early shows where she talked about losing her sight she bought some eye drops, and someone had laced them with lye, and she burned her eyes out both. So she went completely blind in just a matter of minutes. And went through depression, and then she suddenly got off the bed and started doing things and really had a massive impact on the world in a significant way. And she talks about, Marcy says at the end of the story, she says, you know, and by the way, Marcy's book is Happy for No Reason. So again, we're talking about happiness today. But what Marcy said was, she said the woman's, when in the end of her interview, she says, you know what? She said, I may have lost my sight, but I gained my vision. And so when he's talking right now about this experiential machine that we have at the front of our brain and that we can choose to fast forward in life, have an experience and decide how it's going to be, decide if it works, if it doesn't work. And what I urge you to do as a kick-ass life practitioner is to fast forward into all eventualities. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's divorce, you know, or whether it's, you know, embezzlement, or whether it is, you know, being a paraplegic or quadriplegic, you know, that you can choose right now to say if when that occurs and put your mind in there. Okay, so you wake up in the morning and you can't walk. Okay, what's the first words out of your mouth going to be? Is it going to be a powerful statement? Like, you know, let's get on with it. You know, let's just get on with it. I mean, that's how I feel I want to be. I want to be such an inspiration to myself. To the people around me, and never once uttering a word out of my mouth, poor me, never once uttering, because I know there's been so many great models of people out there. There are so many people right now in wheelchairs that do such amazing things in the world and live such powerful lives. Why on earth couldn't I already decide to wake up in the eventuality of me, of something catastrophic happening in my life, which again, I lead a very active life. There's a very good chance something can happen. And guess what? You don't have to leave an active life in order to have these things happen, right? You just have to lead a life and these things can happen. They can happen when you're sitting at home on a couch. So, you know, Dr. Wayne Dwyer, he says with everything that happened to you, you can either feel sorry for yourself or treat what has happened as a gift. Everything is either an opportunity to grow or an obstacle to keep you from growing, and you get to choose, right? That's Dr. Wayne. I've got to get him on the show, by the way. If you ever have a contact with Wayne, you can get hold of him, see if he'll come on the show and have a chat with us. But let's go back to Dan as he explores this. But I wanted to give it some context around why what I love what he's saying, it resonates with me, because I've been saying this for years without ever listening to a scientist telling me that I could have this choice and that actually I'm predisposed to be able to fast forward in my life and see what's going to happen and then already make a choice about how I'm going to react to it or respond is really what I say. And it reminds me of a funny story. I was telling this story the other day where I was trapped in an elevator in Kelowna, British Columbia at the Grand Hotel. And it was the night before one of my big programs. And the challenge I had was that, you know, I mean, I have all these people flying from around North America. And I think a couple came in from Australia. And here I am stuck in an elevator for like 3.5-4 hours. And so again, because I've already thought about how I want to be when I'm stuck in an elevator, I know it's hard to think about all eventualities, but you can generalize. You know, something happens that out of the ordinary or that is potentially upsetting. How do you want it to be? How are you going to act, right? And so the elevator stops. I immediately realize I'm in a situation where I need to call someone. So I call and say, hey, I'm stuck in the elevator. And it's late at night. I have a big course starting in the morning, all right? So what do? I lay down. I think, you know, the best thing for me to do right now is just to chill out. And I lay down, I'm wearing a pair of shorts, I got my flip-flops, and I put them over my eyes because there's like 24 halogen lights in the inside of this elevator. And anyone who's manufacturing elevators right now, please think about this. There should be a light switch. So if you're stuck in the elevator, that you could probably throw the switch and maybe put a little fan on. Just saying, because it's like a little cooking oven in there, right? So here I am being cooked gently, getting a suntan in this elevator, laying down. I thought, I'm just going to go to sleep until they wake me up, all right? And suddenly there's a sort of like voices. Hello, hello. And I'm saying, hello, I said, are you all right? I said, yeah, I'm great. No worries. I said, don't worry about it. I said, do you want me to open the door from the inside and see if I can help you? No, no, you can't touch it. I said, okay, no worries. I said, but you're fine. I said, I'm good. I said, he said, well, it's going to be a while. I said, no worries. Anyway, so they go and do the fire brigade thing, and the people who build elevators, they come, and you know, I'm laying there trying to sleep. And the only thing that really bugged me, to be quite honest, was this guy who insisted on keep asking me how I was every like 50 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, if I can get like half an hour sleep right now, you know, then I get up at 5 a.m. to get ready for this program, I'm going to be a little rested, right? Anyway, so he kept, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Do you want me to help out? No, no, don't do it. Anyway, so finally, after a few hours, they say, look, we need your help. And I said, what do you want me to do? I said, so I had to force open the door, and I had to sort of, because I'm quite tall, I was able to reach up, and there's a latch that I could pull that would release the doors. Because, I mean, the elevator wasn't sort of, half of it was stuck on the floor. So that if you open the doors, I'd have to climb up about 5 feet to get out. So, you know, it's kind of like I was halfway between two floors, right? Anyway, so I decided how it was going to be. I knew what my response was going to be. And these guys were terrified. I could tell the manager of the hotel was there. The staff were there. The assistant manager, they were all lined up. There was the people from the elevator company, and there was the fireman, right? They're all standing there. It's like 9 of them. All right. And I jump out the elevator. I give him a hug. I say, good night. Have a good one. I didn't talk about it. I didn't make, I didn't ask for a refund. I didn't ask for a new room. I didn't ask for free breakfast. I wanted to forge into their minds this story of, this was unbelievable. This guy was stuck in an elevator for 4 hours, and he didn't just say a word, but he got out the elevator, gave me a big smile, a big hug, and said, thank you, and just walked away without any conversation. And that is a choice. That's a choice to actually think that, okay, shit's going to happen, and I'm going to respond into it in a way that no one expects. And I think that whether it's catastrophic or whether it's small, because once it's happened, there's nothing we can do. So let's listen to Dan as he talks more about this. And I may interrupt again. So here we go.
Now, all of you have done this. I mean, you know, Ben and Jerry's doesn't have liver and onion ice cream, and it's not because they whipped some up, tried it, and went yuck. It's because from, without leaving your armchair, you can simulate that flavor and say yuck before you make it. Let's see how your experience simulators are working. Let's just run a quick diagnostic before I proceed with the rest of the talk. Here's two different futures that I invite you to contemplate, and you can try to simulate them and tell me which one you think you might prefer. One of them is winning the lottery. This is about $314 million. And the other is becoming paraplegic. So just give it a moment of thought. You probably don't feel like you need a moment of thought. And interestingly, there are data on these two groups of people, data on how happy they are. And this is exactly what you expected, isn't it? But these aren't the data. I made these up. These are the data. You failed the pop quiz, and you're hardly 5 minutes into the lecture. Because the fact is that a year after losing the use of their legs, and a year after winning the lotto, lottery winners and paraplegics are equally happy with their lives. Now, don't feel too bad about failing the first pop quiz, because everybody fails all of the pop quizzes all of the time. The research that my laboratory has been doing, that economists and psychologists around the country have been doing, have revealed something really quite startling to us. Something we call the impact bias, which is the tendency for the simulator to work badly. For the simulator to make you believe that different outcomes are more different than in fact they really are. From field studies to laboratory studies, we see that winning or losing an election, gaining or losing a romantic partner, getting or not getting a promotion, passing or not passing a college test, on, have far less impact, less intensity, and much less duration than people expect them to have.
You know, this is something, again, I want you to noodle on. He's speaking pretty fast because he's only got 21 minutes. So I want you to sort of allow this to absorb, because it really is one of those interesting ideas, right? You know, he talked about losing a partner. I mean, look, statistically, I think, was it 1 in 2 marriages fail? And yet, you know, I see people who are devastated, you know, their marriage has failed, and devastated for years. And sometimes decades, where they sort of hold on to this idea, this ideal, you know, that it didn't work out. And for whatever reason it is, And I kind of look at my own relationship with Pam, you know, who I just absolutely love and adore. And from day one, again, this was a choice. The choice was to have an honorable and an elegant separation. For me, now at the time, it wasn't so easy for Pam. I'm going to be completely honest about this. It wasn't like she had that conversation. I had that conversation. And the intention I set was that we would become great friends and that over time I would regain her trust and that we would be, you know, again, because when you separate, there's not a lot of trust, right? you break it up. Trust is like eroded. And so it took a lot of times where I had to bite the inside of my lip and not do the things I was hardwired, inclined to do, react, say things I didn't, you know, really mean, but, you know, in the heat of the moment. So that happened 3 times in 10 years or 8 years, I think, or maybe it's 7 years, somewhere like that. But the idea, I mean, this is the other part for guys that separate, you know, and I want to really talk to you guys about this. I hear it more from men than from women, but women do it as well. You separate, you know, and then you're bad mouthing your partner when they're not around or in front of your kids. And I'm saying, hey, not a word, never. I mean, people who are, I mean, especially if you're the one leaving. If you're the one leaving a relationship for whatever reason it is, never once do you badmouth that person, ever, ever, ever. Why would you put that energy out in the ether? Why not just say the great things about them and keep that as the sort of your hand on the rudder of that ship? And the other part is this whole financial thing. You know, I'm not trying to make myself as the example, but this is just the truth, is I've never once regretted paying money to Pam, and nor will I ever. And I truly, I mean, it doesn't matter how much it is. It doesn't matter if it's hard, but I mean, if you've been in a relationship, you've had kids and it ends and you know, suddenly you want to get on with a new life, you may have to make some other choices. Maybe you can't afford to go and have another family. Maybe you just have to sort of buck it up and say, hey, but again, I don't want to lecture you because I don't normally do that, but this is really important to me because I see it all the time. And it pisses me off, to be quite frank with you, where, you know, someone leaves somebody and I badmouth them and then sort of just doesn't like the fact that they have to support them. I mean, there's laws in place for that. Imagine if you just switch that story and you just say, you know, I'm never ever going to regret. I'm never ever going to be upset. I'm never ever going to worry about spending this money or giving this money. I'll give it not only freely and openly, but again, I'll do it because it's the right thing to do and I feel good about it. Again, we can choose those emotions, but I can't tell you how many people I see kind of, I have to pay this. You know, you've got 2 kids or 3 kids. That's right. That's just what happens. And so again, but it is a choice. And I think that what we can do is we can choose ourselves into misery and choose ourselves into whatever it is, you know, that sort of doesn't make us feel good inside. But there is always, always, always a choice. And there's always a high ground. And when you take the high ground, what I found when I take the high ground is remarkable things can happen. Like this Christmas, I mean, we're spending Christmas with Pam and the boys together at the ski lodge. And we're excited about it. We're excited about spending time together and being together as a family, an extended family. And for some people, it just sounds so weird. But when you rebuild the friendship and the relationship and the trust, then there's nothing weird. It's like hanging out with our best friend and someone that truly has, you know, the boy's best interest at heart, and the relationship between Jen and Pam is extraordinarily good, extraordinarily good. And again, I mean, and this is something I've said many, many times. And again, I want you to listen to this stuff because a lot of people don't talk about it, but a lot of people are going to be ending relationships when they have children involved. By the way, I don't agree with staying with a partner because I was helping a friend of mine yesterday with this. You know, you're totally unhappy and you're staying together for the kids. I think that personally is the wrong thing to do. I do. And I did that for 3 years where I was unhappy and I didn't make a choice. But after I left, we were able to rebuild and have something much better than being together and unhappy, right? And again, I just want to sort of give you these sort of nips of understanding, because we can make choices when it comes to this particular subject or any subject in our life, whether it's catastrophic or whether it's something that we personally create through a breakdown of relationships, right? Now, it looks like the show is going to go long, but I apologize for this. But it's a great show. Well, I think so. I'm ranting. Why wouldn't it be great? Let's just have a quick listen to another Howlin' Wolf so you get another great song of his, and then we'll move on back to Dan.
Everything fight about a spoon.
I bet you if you close your eyes, you could picture this guy. You could just picture exactly what he looks like. great music, eh? I hope you're enjoying it. I love Howlin' Wolf. So again, I'll put the links on the website, thekickasslife.com, if you want to have a little look. All right, let's go back to Dan and continue. Oh, I should probably turn that one off first. What do you think? There you go. See, I'm learning. 240 shows. I'm still learning. All right, let's go back to Dan.
In fact, a recent study, this almost floors me, a recent study showing how major life traumas affect people suggests that if it happened over 3 months ago, with only a few exceptions, it has no impact whatsoever on your happiness. Why? Because happiness can be synthesized. Sir Thomas Brown wrote in 1642, "I am the happiest man alive. I have that in me that can convert poverty to riches, adversity to prosperity. I am more invulnerable than Achilles. Fortune hath not one place to hit me." What kind of remarkable machinery does this guy have in his head? Well, it turns out it's precisely the same remarkable machinery that all of us have. Human beings have something that we might think of as a psychological immune system, a system of cognitive processes, largely non-conscious cognitive processes, that help them change their views of the world so that they can feel better about the worlds in which they find themselves. Like Sir Thomas, you have this machine. Unlike Sir Thomas, you seem not to know it. We synthesize happiness, but we think happiness is a thing to be found. Now, you don't need me to give you too many examples of people synthesizing happiness, I suspect, though I'm going to show you some experimental evidence. You don't have to look very far for evidence. I, as a challenge to myself, since I say this once in a while in lectures, I took a copy of the New York Times and tried to find some instances of people synthesizing happiness. And here are three guys synthesizing happiness. I'm so much better off physically, financially, emotionally, and almost every other way, mentally almost every other way. I don't have 1 minute's regret. It was a glorious experience. I believe it turned out for the best. Who are these characters who are so damn happy? Well, the first one is Jim Wright. Some of you are old enough to remember. He was the chairman of the House of Representatives. And he resigned in disgrace when this young Republican named Newt Gingrich found out about a shady book deal he had done. He lost everything. Most powerful Democrat in the country, he lost everything. He lost his money, he lost his power. What does he have to say all these years later about it? "I am so much better off physically, financially, mentally, and in almost every other way. What other way would there be to be better off? Vegetably, minerally, animally?" He's pretty much covered in there. Maurice Bickham is somebody you've never heard of. Maurice Bickham uttered these words. Upon being released, he was 78 years old. He'd spent 37 years in Louisiana State Penitentiary for a crime he didn't commit. He was ultimately exonerated at the age of 78 through DNA evidence. And what did he have to say about his experience? "I don't have 1 minute's regret. It was a glorious experience." Glorious! This guy is not saying, "Well, yeah, there's some nice guys. They had a gym." It's glorious, a word we usually reserve for something like a religious experience. Harrius Langerman uttered these words, and he's somebody you might have known but didn't, because in 1949 he read a little article in the paper about a hamburger stand owned by these two brothers named McDonald's, and he thought, "That's a really neat idea." So he went to find them. They said, "We'd give you a franchise on this for $3,000. Harry went back to New York, asked his brother, who was an investment banker, to loan him the $3,000, and his brother's immortal words were, "You idiot, nobody eats hamburgers." He wouldn't lend him the money, and of course, 6 months later, Ray Kroc had exactly the same idea. It turns out people do eat hamburgers, and Ray Kroc, for a while, became the richest man in America. Oh, and then finally, you know, the best of all possible worlds. Some of you recognize this young photo of Pete Best, who was the original drummer for the Beatles, until they, you know, kind of like sent him out on an errand and snuck away and picked up Ringo on a tour. Well, in 1994, when Pete Best was interviewed, yes, he's still a drummer, yes, he's a studio musician, he had this to say, "I'm happier than I would have been with the Beatles." Okay, there's something important to be learned from these people, and it is the secret of happiness. Here it is, finally to be revealed. First, accrue wealth, power, and prestige, then lose it. Second, spend as much of your life in prison as you possibly can. Third, make somebody else really, really rich. And finally, never, ever join the Beatles.
You can see where this is going, but I mean, hopefully this is starting to sort of get through into your head about this choice. And that these people have had these catastrophic things happen and move through them and are happy because they declare it, because they have decided to be, I mean, words like glorious and Pete Best, you know, I mean, just I'm happier than I would have been. And you know, it's so incredible how, again, I'll meet, and I can think of two incidents of this recently. Somebody who's lost money through a partner, shady partner, you know, someone embezzled $1 million from one guy, $300,000 from another, and they've been unhappy for almost 25 years. You know, one was 18, one was 25. How crazy is that, right? And this is what a lot of people live with. They get stuck into a story. And that's the bit that, I mean, he's showing the evidence of science proving that you don't have to be this way. What I'm asking you to do is wake up and not be this way, is to decide now how you're going to be in adversity, because it's an easy choice. And I can tell you, it's not like I haven't had adversity. A lot of people, you don't know my story if you're brand new to the show, but guess what? I've probably traveled the road of adversity as much as the next guy, right? I don't think anymore, but probably, you know, I've got some things I've gone through that would allow me to talk with confidence that it is a choice, and that it would be easy to get stuck in a story, whatever the story is, you know, whether it's abuse as a child or sexual. I mean, it doesn't matter where it starts. I always think of Oprah as the inspiration there. You know, right when she was 9, becomes the most powerful woman in the world, and does so much good in the world in spite of what happened to her. And in some ways, you could say, because of the adversity, she was called to greater things because of the adversity. And I do see that a lot in my profession, that people who work in this profession of personal growth often have gone through a road where they're woken up to say, hey, there are other people don't need to go down that road. I can help them with that, right? That's a lot of guys that do what I do, and girls, this is what happens, right? But you know, happiness is an attitude. We know that we either make ourselves miserable or happy and strong. And here's the most important thing: the work is the same. It takes as much work to be happy as it does to be miserable. And you know, some of you out there right now just need to get happier, and you need to wake up tomorrow morning and make a choice about happiness. And then what Jen teaches is there's things we can do every day to practice happiness. And I'll bring her on and we'll talk about, you know, and I think I've done shows on that, you know, the things you could do to be happy if you go through the archives. Now, I know that on iTunes, we've limited where you can go back to. That's just because we're going through all these changes right now. But you can still go to the website and find the old shows, thekickasslife.com. I talked about Marcy Shymoff's show. I think it was show number 6 or 7. But with that being said, let's go back to Dan and we'll listen to it for a few more minutes and I'll wrap this puppy up.
Okay, now I, like Z. Frank, can predict your next thought, which is, yeah, right. Because when people synthesize happiness, as these gentlemen seem to have done, we all smile at them, but we kind of roll our eyes and say, yeah, right, you never really wanted the job. Oh, yeah, right. You really didn't have that much in common with her, and you figured that out just about the time she threw the engagement ring in your face. We smirk because we believe that synthetic happiness is not of the same quality as what we might call natural happiness. What are these terms? Natural happiness is what we get when we get what we wanted, and synthetic happiness is what we make when we don't get what we wanted. And in our society, we have a strong belief that synthetic happiness is of an inferior kind. Why do we have that belief? Well, it's very simple. What kind of economic engine would keep churning if we believed that not getting what we want could make us just as happy as getting it? With all apologies to my friend Mathieu Ricard, a shopping mall full of Zen monks is not going to be particularly profitable because they don't want stuff enough. I want to suggest to you that synthetic happiness is every bit as real and enduring as the kind of happiness you stumble upon when you get exactly what you were aiming for. Now, I'm a scientist, so I'm going to do this not with rhetoric, but by marinating you in a little bit of data.
All right, so he's going to move into the whole data piece here where he's doing actual studies, which, again, I urge you to go listen to. I just wanted you to listen to some of his work and get a sort of sense of that. So before I wrap this up, I think we should have one more of the great Howlin' Wolf.
The rooster crow, something tell me
ladies and gentlemen, you know, today's show, inspired by a conversation I had yesterday. As usual, they're always what's going on. I don't normally know what I'm going to talk about much until I sit down. But this is really, I think, such a big conversation. And that, you know, we can be happy from the things that have not gone right. We can be happy from the things that we didn't get. And we can still go after the things we want. I think both, you know, I don't think it's one or the other. What he proves and what Jen teaches, they're not opposing philosophies. They're the same philosophy, except one is science-based. It's driven by science and data and stats. And so that's a really important thing, a distinction. Is that, you know, when you have science, data, and facts driving this information, you know, there's nothing you can do. You can't sit there and pretend it's not so. You can't say, well, that's anecdotal. You can't say, well, she's just like, yeah, she was born that way. No, no. This is studies that he's done. And in his book, you know, I think it's called Stumbling Across Happiness. I think that's what it's called. You know, it's just, I will check that for you just so you know. In fact, I'll put the book on the show notes. Don't forget, by the way, you can join us on Facebook, davidonfacebook.com, if you want to come and play, and I'd love to see you there. Come and play. Come on, come talk to us. Help us get this thing into the stratosphere. And then make a choice this week. I want you to pre-think some of the things that may happen to you, like a car accident. Let's put that one in. Someone dings you from behind. I've had this happen. I was hit by a cement truck with my kids in the car. And I just remember, and I was actually quite hurt because I was turning around at the time. And I talked about this a few weeks ago. But again, getting out of the car, knowing how you're going to respond beforehand. No disappointment, no anger, no whatever. Who's hurt? Whatever. I mean, I always think that how many times have I done something in my car that could have created an accident, and I may be the one who's at fault at some point. And I hope someone jumps out the car, understanding that, guess what? I wasn't intentionally trying to hurt someone. Well, in fact, I'll tell you one last story. This is hilarious, and it could have been catastrophic. I was in the Kootenays, and I was playing ice hockey a lot. I was playing about 4 days a week. And we drove down to Nelson, which is this little tiny town. And my ex-wife Pam and I, she started playing as well, right? And she wasn't playing on a team, but she'd come and play pickup just to get on the ice and have some fun, right? And so we went up to a pickup game in Nelson. It wasn't a league game. And when we got outside, I had these great big Sorel boots on, these huge things. And they were a little bit bigger than my feet, but they were really warm. And I jump into my van. I have this old Astra van. And Pam jumps in. And as she jumps in, this is what she sees. I'll tell you what happened afterwards. Suddenly, I drive full speed about 100 yards, maybe not that far, maybe 40 yards. Let me not exaggerate. And I hit this car broadside, and I lift it off the ground. And I just wrecked the side of this car. That's what she sees. And then she sees me fall out of the car laughing like an idiot, like holding my belly laughing, like laughing out loud. And then suddenly I look up, and across the road is a guy standing there with two shopping bags and his mouth wide open and his eyes wide open. And he looks at me, he says, that's my car. And I said, I am so sorry. And I'm still laughing because it was like ridiculous what happened, because I could see what Pam was thinking. She's like, what are you doing? You're just driving into a car like it's nothing. And what had happened was my feet had slipped off the brake. And my boot had got caught between the brake and the accelerator. And now I'm driving full speed. It looks like I just driving into this car, boom, lift it off the road, you know. And anyway, so I went up to the guy. I said, I am so sorry. I said, look, you know, if you want, I'll just pay cash and just get this thing done for you. So we took it into the shop, got it fixed, and it was fine. But it was just, again, you know, things happen, right? So you're going to make choices, and I hope you make good ones this week. And again, next time you're in a situation, I want you to really have pre-thought it. Pre-think some of these things out. Decide how you're going to be in adversity. Decide how you're going to be the next time you're challenged this way. And then practice it and see what happens. And I'm telling you, life is a lot easier. And I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.